now listening to the Bully Pulpit Podcast, bringing you the hot sauce since 2018, Neofunk. Now, here's your hosts.
And now, the starting lineup for your Bully Pulpit Podcast. From Libertyville, Illinois, he smells like shit. Gary Calzone.
What the fuck? From Brookfield, Illinois, he smells worse. Ryan Graham. And we have a guest today.
That was the lamest fucking intro. Was, we put no effort really into that whatsoever.
Do I really smell?
No. Okay. I'm just trying to make you self-conscious.
I was going to say, I showered before I came, so. Yeah, so we got a guest here. We're really excited. This is one of my favorite Bulls fans on Twitter, at BullsScripted. How you doing, man?
Chilling like a villain.
Nice. We just want to kind of talk about the crazy-ass trade deadline that just happened, as well as, you know, anything you want to talk about. So one thing we do is, if you got a beer ready, feel free to crack it in the middle of the podcast. That's kind of just our thing.
What's your story? So you got, I've been told, I don't know much about you, but I've been told you've been blocked by several prominent Bulls people on Twitter. How did that happen?
Pretty much. I came to Twitter after the Cameron Payne trade in the midst of the whole, are we trading Jimmy Butler, are we not trading Jimmy Butler kind of scenario, and I came to Bulls Twitter with a pitchfork and a torch and wanted Garpax's head like everybody else. And then I kind of started to do my own research instead of just taking everyone's word at face value. And optics aside, I just don't feel the same, and people don't tend to like my optimism, and they don't like the stats or the proof that I'll bring to the debate, and I feel like they just kind of closed me out. They don't want me cramping their style, and they don't want me taken away from their viewers. So, you know, it is what it is.
What's your body count right now? I think you had MK Hoops, right?
I don't know, dude. My body count is so high. Chuck Swirsky blocked me when I first came to Twitter because he was defending Garpax, and I called him Chuckles, and he took offense to it. And that was before I was even, like, taking anything serious. I kind of came to Twitter just, you know, messing around like most people, and I had Paul Stino, who actually writes at Bloggable, ironically, he messaged me. He was like, dude, do you ever think about doing this seriously? And I was like, no, not really. I was kind of just messing around, and he was like, well, you know, you kind of seem like you know what you're talking about. And I kind of took that initial vote of confidence and just rolled with it.
There you go. Yeah, we kind of similar. I never did Twitter until I think it was that trade deadline. It was that trade deadline that I came to Twitter. But I just kind of lurked for a while, and then we just kind of got serious with it just this season. But, yeah, that same trade deadline was the I think it was, like, right before. I'm like, who the fuck's going to get traded? Is Jimmy Butler going to get traded? And then my boy Doug gets traded for Cam. And now, basically, I think Ryan here is scared of drafting anybody named Cam or anybody from Murray State.
This is true.
So you don't have any Ja fever?
I have Ja fever.
I don't know. I'm not sold. I mean, he's super athletic. Seems like
he's
a
got
good playmaker.
Insane passing vision.
Right, but I don't know. I don't know what the level of competition. Is he just going to be? I don't know if he's a top five pick. He might. Yeah, I think he's going to be a good NBA player, but I don't know if he's like.
He basically has the same competition that Steph Curry and Damian Lillard played in.
Well, I'd be interested in seeing what he does in the tournament. Not that that's a huge, you know. I mean, anyone can like have one bad game in the tournament and then be out, but I'd be interested to see what he does against or how he looks against top competition.
I think that is definitely something most people could agree with, that Murray State making the tournament, unlike Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz, would be very big for Ja Morant and obviously the team scouting him to see him against more consistent competition. I'm trying to think of the game. It was against a very good defensive college team that wasn't really in their tradition.
Alabama?
No, it wasn't Alabama.
Because they did play Alabama this year, right?
I do believe so. I'm drawing a blank, but it was Auburn. There we go.
Okay, yeah.
And he had a very good game against them, and he was facing traps at every turn because he's the only player on the team, and he still put up a near triple-double. So that kind of stuff, I think the kid's just got the it. It don't matter where he's playing. I shared something from YouTube the other day, the story of how the assistant coach or scout at Murray State ended up finding him. He was at a camp for top prospects, and he went to get a bag of chips.
And he wanted the chips. I did see that.
You did see that? Yeah, so he found Ja in a separate gym, not working with the top prospects, being videoed by his dad, and he got his boss and was like, you know, we need this guy, and as Murray State, getting somebody of the quality of Ja Morant is rather rare. So I understand your reservations with Ja, but I think he's definitely a top five pick in this draft. There's no debate there.
Oh, for sure. I'd go as far as saying he's right now, if the draft were today, he'd be pretty clear cut over RJ and Cam.
Yeah, so I mean, that
depends on the team. Depends on the team.
Wings are just so valuable in the NBA, and RJ and Cam can both technically probably play a point forward position, and that's where I get kind of conflicted of which way to go, because the way the league is going, you just want as many 6'8 guys that can shoot the ball on the floor at once as possible.
Yeah, so look at the Sixers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically right now I get total Carmelo vibes from RJ, which, I mean, could be a very good thing, but also, I don't know.
Oh, I went as far as the Canadian connection with Andrew Wiggins, and then
okay, yeah, yeah.
And then we kind of got the whole Zion thing. Is he going to be the next Jabari, or is he going to be the next LeBron? So I think this draft is kind of funny in that sense, that you have a Canadian with some question marks around his game and a physical specimen that you want on your team, but you don't know if he's going to hold up for his career or not. So
yeah, it does give some nightmare flashbacks to, I guess, 2014 or whatever that was.
And I'm not saying I think either of them are going to be there. I'm just saying those two little similarities kind of give me some irony.
Zion's something different, though.
Oh no, I'm not trying to call him Jabari, but you know, they both were compared today to LeBron. I did not. I was driving
Zion's
all over.
Yeah. So the dude like has a catch and shoot three in the corner. Zion is in the lane, like under the basket, runs out and just like volleyball blocks it into like the 10th row. Just some incredible like views that were on or like camera angles on Twitter. He's going to be really special unless he gets hurt, that's what we've been talking about before. It's like what happens to Zion if he blows out a knee or something like that and you take away his athleticism? Is he, you know, what kind of player does that turn him into?
Yeah.
And I guess my only positive spin on that is look at Jabari. He may not be who he was, but I think that's more of a confidence and a conditioning problem right now for Jabari. His explosiveness is still there. We saw it tonight, and, you know, obviously
he turned back the clock tonight. That was weird.
Well, he had flashes of that. He did about the same thing tonight that he was doing here. He just wasn't allowed to do it as much. He still had 4 turnovers to his 6 assists, on par with his average of equal assists to turnovers. So it really wasn't anything we hadn't seen. He had a few more dunks than usual, but the commentators even pointed out that he was gassed still.
So, yeah, anyways, you know, I was going to ask you, I was going to interrogate you a little bit. I was going to say, are you single? Because some of our lady fans heard you were coming on and they know you're a total stud. But I kind of got that answer. Bull scripted is taken.
Yeah, but bull scripted's taken. He's in a 3-year relationship and he's not looking for anything else.
Yeah, I don't know where I heard that you were a stud, but I also heard you might be a Gar burner account, so that kind of negates the shit out of that.
I mean, hey, I went live during the draft last year. I think I shared my Snapchat for a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe there are some creepers. Maybe they're still lurking, but they haven't let me know. So
that must have been where I heard it, man. So,
but the Gar burner, no. You can call me a Pax burner. He's at least like somewhat of a legend. I'll accept that kind of criticism, but leave Gar's name away from me.
Okay, so you don't have a face only a mother can love.
Nope, I got a face plenty of ladies can love.
Cool, right on. So anyways, thoughts on, let's talk about, we can talk about some general NBA stuff later, because this trade deadline was fucking bananas. But let's talk about Bulls only. What do you think of the deal?
Initially, I was kind of on the fence. I like the idea of just throwing out a bunch of one-year deals to veterans, but as you can kind of see around the league, the one-plus-one and the one-year deals can kind of cause some tensions in locker rooms. Players don't know how long that guy's going to be there, if he's actually part of their future. So then the more I thought on it, and the more I kind of looked at it, and I was like, well, our best-case scenario was probably Tobias or Middleton, and we were going to have to max them the fuck out anyway. So is Otto Porter really that bad? We get him for half the duration. He's on a 1+1 with a player option. Maybe he likes it in Chicago and he'll be around 26. Maybe he wants an extension that takes him through 30 and he'll, you know, take a pay cut off the top for some guaranteed long term. We don't know what's going to happen there. So I wasn't thrilled with it, but the more I thought about it, the more it did make sense.
Yeah, I've always been terrified of Otto Porter's contract, but I've always saw a fit of Otto Porter basically like in between Zach and Lauri. I think that's like Zach's wet dream, is somebody that can like allow him to have more efficiency. And in the two games that he's played with him, he has shot over 50% basically. You were really seeing him shoulder a lot of the load earlier this year and have basically no spacing.
No, that was clearly one of our biggest problems. We had Shaq Harrison shooting threes before we got Seldon, TLC, and OPJ now. And obviously Portis with his injury initially was finding his rhythm, and then Kevin Durant pulled his elbow and then he was dealing with that. So BP didn't get going until the last two games, and then I think he got going too good and they're like, all right, we're not gonna risk not being able to match this guy and having to let him walk for free in the offseason. We got to get something for him. And they were able to move on from their Jabari situation in the process.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you see it with the Wizards too. I don't think it's sustainable how they're playing. But I think all in all, like Otto Porter on the Wizards. So Ryan here, we were doing a fantasy draft. I think it was, you know, at the beginning of the season, before the season started. So we're in a fantasy basketball league together. Ryan ended up drafting a bunch of Wizards. But I remember like one thing is Ryan's like, you know, I'm waffling whether I want to draft Otto Porter or not. What does he do? And I'm like, he's not gonna put up miraculous stats for you, especially in a fantasy league. But I think one thing that Otto Porter was when the Wizards were making it to like the second round of the playoffs a couple years ago, I think Otto Porter was one of their most important players. I think just as much as John Wall and Bradley Beal. If you look, and we're not advanced stats nerds here, but if you look at some of his advanced analytics, you know, with his box plus minus, especially, you know, on both sides of the ball, he was killing it for them.
There was a stat that came out the other day that there's only 5 players in the NBA that have an A- rating on the interior and the perimeter defense. It was Giannis Antetokounmpo, Pascal Siakam, Otto Porter Jr., and I forgot the other two names because they were probably irrelevant compared to the ones that I just named. But
Cristiano Felicio.
Yeah, he blocked Jabari tonight. That was game over for me.
And then he took a tumble, and Boylan sat him down after that.
No, yeah, I was kind of like, oh, shit, now we really can't buy Rolo out. Even our tank commander's injured.
I know, yeah, that's one thing where if they did want to buy Rolo out, they're definitely going to need to pick up a big. I know a lot of people are calling for Frank Kaminsky. I have some reservations there just because I've always disliked Frank Kaminsky as an NBA player. You know, obviously a good college player, but I think that's another face only a mother can love.
I mean, Frank the Tank.
He's beloved in Wisconsin, man.
Yeah.
Better watch it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the Bucks will pick him up for the playoffs, but you know, I'm not a Frank the Tank fan. Although playing Seldon at power forward is a good way to tank. So I don't know if we have to add another big man. Just keep playing small. It's what Dallas did last year with Yogi and JJ and DSJ. They just put the 5 smallest guys they had out there and let them chuck up shots.
What did you think about that lineup yesterday where they had Lowry at the five, kind of spaced the floor? I think they put OJ or
Otto. Otto was at the four.
They put him at the
Don't
four.
Forget the P, man. Don't OPJ, forget the P.
OPJ, and then Seldon was playing the three, Zach at the two, and then Archie at the one. So, I mean, they had a pretty small lineup out there, and I think their offensive rating in the 12 minutes that they played together was like 155 or something like that.
That's pretty intense. You know, what I really like about Lowry is his natural position is definitely power forward. But I do think in the future, if he continues to improve his ball handling, you can put him anywhere from 3 to 5. Because he does on most nights, the way that the NBA is now, he plays against small ball fours all the time. He's guarding traditional small forwards consistently on a nightly basis. So I really like Lowry's versatility in that sense that you can put him at the five. I like the concept of that lineup. It's obviously the opposite of what Boylan wanted to do, which is one of the things that points to me. Just, I don't care what they say in the media, Boylan's gone in the offseason. He scrapped his whole entire game plan and is doing what he's being told to do. So, but no, I like the concept of it. I don't know if it's something you can rely on, but
yeah. What do you think about, like, so I think they're at a franchise record right now of most games over 100. I think we're in like the 20s right now, maybe, or late teens. I'm not entirely sure, but what do you think about that? Is Boylan, you think Boylan's just basically doing what he's told? Or, but it just seems like the offense, at least, the defense has suffered. So the defense when Boylan came in was actually rather impressive, but the offense was one of the worst offenses I've ever seen in my life. But to counteract that, now it's kind of gone the opposite. Their defense is just straight trash. I think a lot of that actually has to do with Wendell Carter Jr. being out. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think like Boylan's starting to come around? Do you think he's like starting to have some urgency for his job or what?
I think he's just taking orders. I think he was taking massive hits in the media for slowing things down, even though it was working defensively, and he is a defensive coach, and obviously that's his forte. They still run a good amount of Fred's plays. I just think he's taking orders. I think they were taking too much heat for not developing the players the proper way, and they're young and they need to be running, and the front office was just like, yeah, dude, we know your defense is working, but we kind of got to do something different here. This isn't the way the NBA's played anymore. So I don't think it's so much Boylan coming around as it's just Jim being a good soldier still.
Right. So we every week, like, this is a new thing we've been doing, is taking some fan questions. So yeah, we'll definitely include you in on these. The first one calls for one of our buds that came on our podcast a few weeks ago, Vic Selbs, who does some pretty cool YouTube videos just kind of around the NBA. But he said, who would you rather have managing your team, Ron or C-Red Fred? I think we're all going to have the same answer, but what do you think about that?
Oh, God, I don't know. I love Fred to death. He's my dude, but we'd still have Jabari Parker, and he'd probably be making $20 million for a long time. Now, do I want Jabari or Jeremy Lamb for $20 million? Is the question here.
I think he wanted to max Jeremy Lamb out. I think that's one of the things he was saying at one point.
What is his argument for that?
That he's has a better advanced analytics than Zach Levine.
He's an RPM monster. You know, I'm going to go with Fred, just because I think Fred would be very enthusiastic and get some fun times. I don't know who I trust making the decisions, though.
I think the front office perception would be pretty different around the league. I think a lot of people would be like, hey, I kind of want to play for this motherfucker.
Maybe. Maybe they think he was insane and he was too optimistic, and I don't know. You know, I think Pax is actually like the perfect person for the job that he's doing.
We've been saying on this podcast a couple times, like if you're gonna keep it together with Gar Pax, like bring in Pip and make it Pip Pax or Pat Pix. One of those.
I think have Pit you Pack seen some of Scotty's takes on the jump man? I don't know about that. Like,
okay, I'm talking about from like a pure perception. Like, even if he doesn't do anything, just have him meet with the free agents.
Oh, God, I mean, sure. But that's still, like, what are they going to... They're going to bring up Future. They ain't going to talk basketball. They'll be like, you listen to Future, Scotty? And he's going to lose it. And that's just not going to be fun.
Is he very anti-Future?
I'd imagine after what happened with his wife that he's pretty anti-Future.
Tell me what happened there, because I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
No.
Scottie Pippen's wife had an affair on him with Future. Scottie Pippen then bought a super expensive ring to apologize to his wife for cheating on him, and then she continued to hang out with the Kardashians, and I'm pretty sure they're divorced now.
Oh my God. Yeah, okay, so... we run out of Iowa here. And Scottie Pippen's daughter was an Iowa Hawkeye. I think she just went to school there. There was some controversy about 5 years back. I don't know if you heard about it, but Scottie Pippen's daughter got picked up by some cops for peeing in a plant in a hotel lobby.
This poor man. He did such great things with his life. And the women in his life are just trashing his name. Oh my lord!
What's even funnier is we had
a friend who did the same thing.
We had a roommate in college together because we went to college together. We had a roommate who transferred from Iowa. Obviously, the story is like 5-6 years ago, so that's when he was there, and he transferred the next year. So I showed him this story. He's like, oh, I peed in the same hotel lobby. Apparently, that's just a thing in Hawkeye Nation.
Apparently, that plant looks like a urinal or something. I don't know.
But yeah, anyways, I think Scottie Pippen is pretty well respected around the league. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe somebody does bring up Future and he just punches him right in the face in their free agent interview.
I mean, obviously I'm cracking jokes. I doubt anybody would ever have the balls to mention Future that's aware of the situation to Scottie Pippen. I know I damn sure wouldn't. I even got kind of scared saying it on here. And I ain't never going to meet Scottie Pippen. So
Scottie Pippen's never going to listen to this.
No.
Hey,
no.
Man, you never know.
And if he is, hi, Scottie.
Yeah, thanks. Call me. For subscribing. But, yeah.
I got probably 8 years ago. I went to a Tech N9ne concert in Milwaukee, and they were handing out. This is right when Future was coming up. They handed out free Future concert tickets for like their next show, like the next weekend. Those things went straight in the trash. So any Future fans that listen to our podcast, fuck that.
I don't endorse that message. I'm just a guest.
We burn bridges on this podcast.
Yeah.
So, but no, back to Ron or Fred, I'd take Fred, just because at least Fred stays, like, in the realm of realistic. Like, he's definitely, like, on the very high end of optimistic, but, like, his ideas are at least, I can understand where he's coming from.
And he's, what, backed up by, like, University of Utah researchers or some shit?
No, yeah, 92% or whatever he said it was. I'm not sure how valid that is, but... Hey, I think that 92% is probably better than, Ron's whatever percent he's at for this year, because I really don't know what happened to Ron. He was one of two people that I ever just freely endorsed. I really don't do endorsements for endorsements and stuff like that. Ron had some valid points that I shared, and that came around and bit me in the butt.
So is Lauri Markkanen just an up-and-coming Brook Lopez?
That's what I hear. I haven't seen Brook Lopez drop 30 and 10 for three straight games in his career, and he didn't shoot any three pointers until like his sixth season in the NBA. So I don't know how that's even a legitimate comparison that somebody can come up with.
I don't know if I've seen him get 10 rebounds in the last 8 years.
That's a valid point too.
So we got Lake Joshua at Big Bull Javi. This is more of a serious question. What do you think the Bulls need to see from Chris Dunn in the last 27 games to keep him as the starting point guard, or is it too late?
Oh man, I don't think it's too late, but I do think that there's
clock's ticking.
They're bringing somebody in, whether that's Ja Morant or Darius Garland in the draft, or it's a starter caliber point guard. Chris Dunn's going to have competition, though I do think that's what Chris Dunn needs, and I do think a lot of the time in the media, that's why he gets singled out and criticized, because they know the kind of person he is. We've seen, like last year and a few times this year, Chris Dunn thrives under pressure. If you know if you know his backstory, you know why he thrives under pressure. So I think a lot of the media that comes out from the front office and the attacks on Chris Dunn are somewhat strategic and motivational, and I don't think that they're fair. Chris hasn't started 82 games in the NBA. He's, you know,
I don't think Chicago media is that smart.
I'd have to agree with you there. I think there's a lot of hate-driven stuff in here. Rationality has kind of gone out the window.
This shit's gotten personal, too.
I don't understand it, and I really stay away from that side of Bulls Twitter, and most of them have me blocked at this point anyway, so they make that fairly easy. But I don't know. I don't get it. Like,
so if you... back to this point guard situation. So we've got a situation here. I think Gar Foreman's been seen at a ton of Murray State games already this year. I think that's a guy that we're heavily targeting. I've got hunches. Like, I don't know if it's because they're predictable, but like, I have hunches of basically who they're going to go after next. I got this hunch about Jabari last year. And then I got a hunch before the trade deadline happened that basically I was under the impression that they were going to go after Tobias Harris in free agency. And then after he got traded, I'm pretty sure that's the domino that fell that basically made them make the OPJ move. And then I did hear some media reports saying that was actually the case. So my hunch here is that they really like Ja Morant. They want Ja Morant. We've got a situation where we could have the number one pick. We could have the number four pick, which is where we're at right now. Or we can have, what's the lowest we can have? Is it seven?
If we're sitting at four, we can fall all the way to eight. You can fall four spots from wherever you are. That's why being the worst has its benefit of guaranteed top five.
Right. So let's just say, let's say obviously they're not in a position to draft Ja Morant. So I think Ja Morant's two or three. I'm under the, like, Phoenix, if Phoenix is at two, they're taking Ja Morant. I think no doubt. But if Phoenix is not the competition, like, I'm pretty sure they're really looking. They're going to look to trade up, is my opinion. What do you give? So you seem like you're on the Ja Morant hype train. What do you give for Ja Morant? If let's say you're at worst case scenario, you're at seven or eight, I guess. What?
So would it be Chris Dunn and something else? Because the Suns need a point guard. They can't just.
Right. So let's say it's like the Magic or
who just got Markel Fultz.
Yeah, or Cleveland or something like somebody that like has recently acquired a young point guard.
I think it would take similar to what we saw last year for Dallas to move up to three to get Doncic. If we're sitting at five and we want to move up, it's probably going to take a top five protected first and that pick to move up. And I do think that your hunch in that sense is correct. I do think the Bulls this draft are going to take a swing that they didn't take last year. And I think last year's selection was actually rather calculated.
Right. So let's say you're sitting at eight and somebody's really hardballing you. What's the most you give up? So like I would say make that pick unprotected. The hope is that we're not going to be that low that, hopefully, we're not picking in the top five next year. What does it take? Like, if somebody asked for Zach LaVine, do you say absolutely not?
I don't know what I say. Because it depends on their cap situation. We're being too hypothetical here. Like, if a team is in a cap situation where they can't really handle Zach LaVine, then you have more leverage. So, I don't know. I don't think I trade Zach LaVine. I think Zach has a lot of potential. I think he's on a fairly decent contract for what he can be in the next 3 years. He gets a lot of hate. I'd say probably, I think you just keep adding firsts until you get to where you want. And okay. I think because they're the most coveted pick, I don't think anyone's going to value Denzel Valentine or Antonio Blakeney. If they're trading out of getting a point guard because they already have a point guard, how much do they want Chris Dunn? So I think you just start stacking picks on. I don't know.
Recently just realized that Antonio Blakeney is guaranteed next year.
It's like
realize that until recently.
It's like $1.4 million, and he's definitely got a low basketball IQ, but for a back end of the bench guy, you can't ask for anybody better to get you a bucket.
Sure. I could say that he's more likely to get you a bucket than Shaq Harrison at this point. He's a guy that's really disappointed me.
He's got to stop dunking or trying to dunk.
Yeah,
well, that's his calling card. He knows he can't shoot. He's got to dunk the ball, and unfortunately, he dunks the ball about as good as Chris Dunn lays it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. They're just at a point right now where there's so many guys that probably wouldn't make it on a lot of NBA rosters.
And that's what tanking teams and rebuilding teams are.
Right.
Well, no, and I was going to ask you, what did you think coming into the season, what was your take? Because after they put every penny in Jabari and only signed G-leaguers, I expected either a decline or, you know, like, staying the same. I really didn't feel going into this offseason that the Bulls wanted to get better. They wanted to do whatever they could to kind of stay where they were, and if they were going to make the playoffs, it was going to be because Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. played at an all-star level.
Yeah, we have Otto Porter now, so, like, in my opinion, it ended up all working out for the best. I don't really care about Otto Porter Jr.'s contract right now. I was really scared of it coming in, but looking at it now, looking at the free agent class, you know, this year is very star-studded, and then, like, the middle of the pack and the bottom of the pack isn't very good. And then you look at next year's free agent class, there's just, it's atrocious. It's basically just like Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol coming off of their massive contracts, basically, are the best players available.
But what I would say for the 2020 free agency to keep an eye on is something like Brandon Ingram is a restricted free agent on a Lakers team that's probably added another star. I don't know. If you're on a team and he's...
Have you seen how poorly he plays with LeBron?
Yeah, but I don't know what you're getting for him at this point. It wasn't Anthony Davis. The longer they wait, now there's going to be another year off his rookie contract. And he's a high pick, so it's not like he has a low salary either. So
yeah, those high pick salaries are getting bigger and bigger.
Oh no, Fultz makes $9 million next year, and that was an understated point in the trade that they did with the Magic, was they cleared cap in that deal,
right,
as well as getting win-now pieces.
And that was a thing I totally forgot. Another criticized move, obviously, is that Doug McDermott trade. I totally forgot that they basically made that move because they didn't want to pay two first-round pick salaries.
Well, the whole theory between trading two mid to late firsts to get up into the lottery is a good thought process. Like, that's what you'd like to do. Obviously,
right.
It backfired because Doug stayed in Creighton, but... You know,
yeah.
In theory, trading up from 19 and 20 to 11, that's something good. That's what you'd want to do in most drafts if
right.
you're targeting one person. It just so happens the person they targeted flopped.
Yeah. So anyways, circling back to the initial question that got us off on this wild goose chase here. Chris
Dunn's
got to
be a facilitator, man.
So say we land number two or three and we get Ja Morant in the draft. I know a lot of people want to bring veteran point guards in. A lot of people are talking about Derrick Rose. Obviously, you're going to get that homer take. One idea that I have that I really like, and I don't know if it's going to work out the way I see it, because, I mean, shit like that's too dream state. But kind of looking at it, I see that Chris Dunn is a killer six man. I say, like, try to extend him for, like, 4 years at, like, $11 million a piece, kind of similar to what, like, Marcus Smart has, and just let him be a dog off the bench. Basically, you said he thrives off of pressure, but he definitely thrives when he's playing well. I think he can school backup guards, especially as he gets, like, up there in age and get some experience behind him. I really like the idea of him backing up Ja Morant and him playing in, like, a situation where he can get some starter minutes, too. You can obviously run those small ball lineups where you have Ja Morant in at the one, Chris Dunn in at the two for defensive purposes, Zach LaVine at the three, Laurie at the four, or Porter at the four, Laurie at the five, or Laurie at the four, and Wendell Carter at the five. What are your thoughts on that?
I think your general idea is on. I think you still bring in a veteran. This team needs a veteran point guard on the team, whether that's just for depth and injuries. If Ja Morant takes off like you expect him to, and, you know, Dunn falls right into that role as a sixth man, you can always flip a good veteran point guard at the trade deadline, especially considering
right. They're
probably going to be on an expiring contract. So I think you do both, and I completely agree with you from the contract standpoint. Chris Dunn's struggling right now. I think actually, and I don't think he's struggling as much as it's being made out to be, but
no.
I think that plays into the Bulls' hands. And something I've pointed out with people's fear of Chris Dunn's age, like Jimmy Butler, you're going to get Chris Dunn's first contract at a discount.
Yes.
And you're going to pay for his prime for 26 to 30. You don't have to pay him after that.
Right. Yeah, I definitely see. I see what you're saying, too. Maybe they could even get him for like $9 million a year and backload it to where he's making 11, 12 in his last year, or he front load it. But yeah, I really like the idea of Chris Dunn coming in as a sixth man. And then I think you can spend some of the money that they have, because, I mean, they do still have a decent amount, like a significant amount, like, of money to spend, even though they just basically cut that in half. I think they cut it from like 40 to 20.
It's somewhere between 15 and 20, but they could always dump Felicio. They could probably find somebody to take Blakeney. They could probably trade Valentine. They could definitely clear cap pretty quick if they needed to.
I think if they have to trade up, I actually think Valentine's a piece that somebody might want to take a flyer on.
I mean, 40% three-point shooters are always going to be valuable in the NBA, even if your name's Denzel Valentine. So
yeah.
I could see, coming off the injury, it's probably going to be a low-balled value, but if he's just a throw-in, he could probably excite somebody.
So let's do some more hypotheticals. Let's say we land. Let's say my plan goes through. We land Ja Morant. We extend Chris Dunn. Who do you want as a who do you want? Who do you want to spend your $20 million on? I like Taj.
I have to agree with the Taj point. I think Taj is somebody that would come back to Chicago. He referenced Pax as like a father figure. He didn't really have a bad departure, similar to Bobby Portis. He kind of got moved on from because the Bulls weren't going to pay him what he was worth to be a backup. And at least Taj kind of understood that, you know, the Bulls are kind of doing him a favor here.
And Taj didn't go and heckle campaign stat line when he came in for the Bulls. Or Joffrey LaVerne's stat line, I guess, because he was playing right away.
This is true. So I don't know, 15 to 20 mil. Like I said, a veteran point guard's a must. You got Rondo, Patrick Beverley, Darren Collison, Ricky Rubio, who Zach LaVine has had success with. And if you're trying to make Zach happy, you bring Rubio. If you're trying to piss Dunn off, you bring Rubio too.
Zach LaVine's. I think Zach LaVine was at his. I think Zach LaVine was at what you want Zach LaVine to be, but he's going to be better because he'll be a more polished player. In his third year, before he had his ACL injury, he was basically playing a lot as an off-ball player. He was shooting, I think, like 7 threes a game, which you don't see him doing anymore, and maybe that's a Jim Boylan thing, but he was shooting at like a 38-39% clip, you know, from three. And he still basically used his athleticism there too, so to his advantage. I think that's his optimal place. And it's worth the $20 million, don't get me wrong.
Oh, no, I think Zach's got a lot of upside that people don't see. I try to share the shooting guard stats around the league from, like, Donovan Mitchell and these guys that get high praise, and they really don't play a different game than Zach.
No.
And they're not that much better on defense, and I'm talking about, like, Devin Booker and, you know, Donovan Mitchell. And these guys get praise, and Zach LaVine gets shit on all the time, and it does bother me because he's 23. This is the first year he's been a lead option. He's coming off an ACL. He's putting up, I don't know if he's still putting up 23, 4, and 4, but that's not something to, like, sniff your nose at. I get he's got to be better on defense, but a lot of that's going to be solved, like you pointed out earlier, with Otto Porter Jr. That has to be one of the key reasons for that signing, is because our wing depth and just talent that we had there has been so abysmal. You can't hide Zach's defense with just Chris Dunn.
Yeah. And they got a couple guys in to do it now. They got Seldon and they got Timothy Luau Cabarrot.
Seldon?
Did I say that right?
I think you did. I don't speak French, but
no.
Seldon's definitely somebody that I wouldn't mind them spending some of that $20 million on after they get a veteran point guard. I think
I like Taj, Seldon.
I think Taj coming along is a very good idea. He is the epitome of the culture that you're trying to rebuild, and hell, you could probably even get Noah on a veteran's minimum to be your reserve center, and I think that would be a good move too. So there's a lot of options in the offseason, and the Bulls, like you said, they didn't really handicap themselves that much from what their realistic options were by getting out of Porter.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, that kind of sums it up. So, all in all, you like Otto Porter? That's a deal you like?
Like I said, initially, I was kind of like, really? We're taking on that salary, and we gave up a pick. We didn't even get a second. And then I thought about it, and it's like, well, they're not even keeping Portis or Jabari. You know, we're moving one problem in Jabari, whether he was a self-made problem by the front office's own doing, or Jabari did more of it to himself than not. You know, you're moving on from a problem. The second was protected, and the Wizards moved the second they had it to dump Morris. So it was clearly something that they were coveting and they needed in the trade to get it done. And I really can't be upset about it. I look at it as more of a free agent signing than a trade, even though the whole Portis situation was kind of awkward.
How poetic is it that they basically played their first game against their first game with Otto Porter Jr. was against the Nets. And if you remember, the Nets are actually the reason for that contract.
Yes, they are.
They offered him, I think, what was it, like 4-year, $106 or $109 million a year to be basically their stud and their guy of the rebuild. They haven't had a draft pick at that point in a long time. And they saw him as a guy. They didn't think that the Wizards were going to match it, but the Wizards saw him as an important piece of why they were having success at the time. So I think that's why they matched it. I don't think, I mean, you can mash a guy like that and go over the cap, which is why I think they did it.
Well, and they were still willing to eat his salary up until Wall's injury. He was told that he was not getting dealt the weekend before leading into the week of the trade deadline. They didn't want to move him. They were more than willing to eat his contract until John Wall tore his Achilles at home, and now he's out for 14 to 16 months. So that's a whole nother season. So they weren't going to play in the luxury tax. And I think the Bulls, in the long run here, are probably going to look kind of smart for taking him on because he is just a very good all-around player, and he makes everybody better. And he plays probably the most important position outside of the point guard.
What was John Wall doing? I've been trying to think of something funny to say, and I haven't felt like, what could that guy be doing?
I don't know.
All right, we lost him here. Ryan, what do you think? You haven't talked in like 5 minutes.
I know, I'm very tired. Are you back?
Hello?
We lost him.
Yeah, I'm going in and out.
Oh.
All right, we got you pretty clear right now.
All right. I didn't hear what your question was.
I just said, what the hell was John Wall doing? Was he jumping on the bed or what?
I don't know. Somebody showed that video of the guy that got arrested for faking the injury by throwing the ice in the water on the floor. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe he just wanted to sit back and collect his $180 million or whatever it is he's making.
Something ridiculous, and now he's going to go back and graduate from college.
Really? He's going back to school?
So, all right, so we've got a situation where everybody's up in arms about John Paxson in the media getting angry. Any thoughts on that? Like, you guys listen to the interviews?
I listen to it, yeah.
Did you think it was that unreasonable? Yeah, I mean, you see Kevin Durant getting shit on by the media right now. I think the media right now is just getting too damn big where they think they can basically do whatever they want and push their own agendas just to create a story that isn't quite there.
I think anytime you're asking somebody if they're going to fire somebody and you're expecting a public response, that you're probably going to get a pretty, like, what the hell kind of question is that response? I think John probably could have handled himself a little bit better, but at the same time, when you're constantly just getting drilled, are you quitting? Are you going to quit, John? Are you really going to quit if the Bulls don't do what they're supposed to do? Because you know everybody wants you to quit. You know they're having a rally. Why is Gar still around? Does he got pictures on people? Like, what's going on?
That was kind of funny, but like...
Oh, no, that was hilarious. And maybe Gar does have pictures on somebody. I don't know, but it's to completely just go at somebody and expect them not to kind of come back at you, like, who the f*** do you think you're talking to right now? Like... He doesn't have to go on the radio and talk to them. He did his own press conference for the Bulls already.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Bulls media and Bulls fans are just too damn angry. We've got the... I think right now more than ever after this trade deadline, we have a pretty decent blueprint right now. Execution is going to be key with a coach, but, I mean, you've got a guy that you... would love to build around in a 7-foot power forward who could shoot 40% from three, throw down a monstrous dunk. I mean, Laurie's all that, and he's only getting better. And I think right now we see him at, he kind of had an off game tonight against the Wizards, but like that's off as in scoring what 20 and 11 when he's been scoring like 30 and 15.
No, I think Portis kind of gets in his head a little bit. I was actually curious to see that storyline play out tonight. I'm not entirely sure who it was that injured Lowry in the preseason, but my money's on Jabari or Portis.
Yeah.
So I think there's some tension there. From what you could see on Instagram, you would never guess that, but that's just my personal hunch. They interact on... Instagram all the time, and it's all friendly. So they might be cool, but I got a hunch that Lowry and BP kind of got a beef the same way that BP had a beef with Nico.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I mean, can you blame Portis, though?
Is BP really channeling his inner Kevin Garnett and just hates European guys?
No, I think he just hates continually getting pushed aside as, you know, the backup power forward. Like, when the hell do I get my chance to be the starter? You guys just keep bringing new guys in and going, oh, yeah, well, he's the new face of our franchise, Bobby, so you get to go sit over there and wait until Lowry's.
Guys that thrive, so guys that play kind of the same offense as Bobby Portis that thrive as a starting power forward are guys like Pascal Siakam that could play really good defense.
No, and I think, for me... At the trade deadline, I was hoping that the Sixers didn't make the Tobias trade. I was hoping maybe a Muscala swap for Portis in a first, because I think between Embiid and Simmons, that Portis, you know, you could kind of hide him with Jimmy, Embiid, and Simmons out there, and then he could just be an offensive threat without having to worry about the defensive end so much.
Yeah.
So do you think there's any team in the East that can challenge the Warriors at this point?
Yeah, the East, I think the top three at the East, and I'm not counting Boston as the top three right now. I know everybody wants to crown them as kings of the East, but I think...
got spanked by the Tobias-less Clippers tonight.
Yeah, I think the top three in the East right now just made some big moves. One of them was for Nico with the Bucks. Another one is for Tobias Harris with the 76ers. They played a really good game yesterday. And first games back are usually pretty like awkward when you got kind of a new, kind of a new system to work. And it looked fine. And then Toronto, whether you want to call it a major step up, but they got Marc Gasol. Do you think any of these teams can compete with the Warriors? Kind of as Ryan was saying?
I think we saw a chink in the armor early in the season. I think if the media keeps pushing KD's buttons, add the boogie fever in there, and I think you could get a pretty volatile situation. But at the same time, they just have a system that works, and everybody gets the ball. And I think everybody's going to be happy. And I don't think Giannis and a bunch of Ersan Ilyasilvas and Nikola Mirotic's are going to take down the Golden State Warriors. I just don't see it.
And advance Lauri Markkanen.
See, that comparison is so out of this world to me that I couldn't even find the humor in that one initially.
See, I'm so, like, I'm constantly calling Kristaps Porzingis dollar bin Lauri, so it's just weird to talk about Brook Lopez being a stud Lauri Markkanen. But yeah, for sure. Do you think LeBron James makes it out of the East if he was in Cleveland this year?
He's LeBron. He owned the East. Korver would still be there. Love wouldn't have sat out most of the season. Tristan Thompson wouldn't be missing every other game. J.R. Smith wouldn't be sitting at home. They wouldn't have been, you know, they come out of the East. I hate to admit it, but LeBron owned the East.
My East is Philly right now. That could bust down into an oblivion if the Jimmy Butler narrative is true. But I still have hope in Jimmy Butler. And I think Tobias Harris makes that team really dangerous.
I can't argue that the Jimmy Butler factor is going to be key. I think Jimmy's going to have to swallow his pride and live up to his word that he just wants to win.
And his other words too. That was a couple of years. I think when he went to Minnesota, his first month in Minnesota, he was scoring like 16 points a game or something like that, taking a back seat to Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. And then he just realized that they weren't going to win with that system and kind of took over. I think Tibbs pushed that a little bit. But he's been adamant saying, like, I don't want to be the lead scorer on the team. I just want to play defense and get, you know, good efficient buckets too. So he has a very good opportunity to do that right now.
Now, Jimmy definitely can seize his opportunity and make some noise, take out the whole Jimmy can't win in the playoffs narrative. He's got a team. I think he fits the Philly kind of mentality that they have there. I don't think he has to worry about telling Embiid that he's got to work harder. And I don't think Embiid's soft like Cat, so I don't think he's going to run into the problems there. It's just, it's Jimmy versus Jimmy right now, and that's, I guess that's kind of what it's been since the Bulls moved him.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that about does the podcast, right?
That about does her. We're about at an hour.
Cool. All right. So what's the message here? Bulls fans, calm the fuck down.
Bulls fans, hold on to your pants. Next year, we're probably going to be in the playoffs. Like, the East sucks. Do you see the bottom of the East? All the teams from where we are to where we want to be are horrible. And they're losing a lot of pieces. We're adding pieces. And I think next year fans are going to be like, wow, how did we suck that bad last year? That was kind of magical.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Hey, of course, man. You guys have a good one.
All right. This is the Bully Pulpit. Gary Calzone, Ryan Graham, and Bulls Scripted. Goodbye.